features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies.
From the Popcorn Talk Network, the online broadcast network for movie talk, and the schmoes know, this is Guilty Movie Pleasures. In-depth discussion on movies, no matter how guilty they make you feel.
Hello, Schmoville! We're back with another episode of Guilty Movie Pleasures. Sadly, Josh McCuga could not be with us this week because he is out actually making money this Tuesday. So we're happy and envious of him at the same time. He's down in San Diego, the whale's vagina. Yes, and the music! That's what's playing. I thought there was a train going through here, but no, it's just the super moody music. If you didn't know, Schmoville, we're talking They Live today. John Carpenter's They Live. And in Josh McCuga's place, we have two very special guests. We have my good buddy Dave Kane.
Yay.
Who you may have seen some of his words written for PBS, Jim Henson, and Wired.com. He also has a Kickstarter going on right now. Can you tell us a little bit about the Kickstarter?
Yeah, I got this anthology comic book called Where's Home that I wrote one of the sections. It's awesome, fantastic.
Where do we find the Kickstarter at?
Well, probably there's a link. We'll link somewhere.
we'll link it.
Yeah, Where is Home on Kickstarter, the anthology. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. Just search Where is Home on the Kickstarter.
And it's comics.
Dr. Seuss book.
Yeah.
Where is home? Home by the gnome.
We have Carlos Alazraki here, a good friend of mine also, who you've heard his voice for in plenty of things from your childhood and today. He was the voice of Rocco in Rocco's Modern Life, also the Taco Bell dog. He was in a voice in Planes. He also, upcoming, he's the busiest man I know. He's in Pixar's Inside Out. Mm-hmm. He has a pending HBO deal, which is amazing, and I'm hoping I can ride those coattails. Mm-hmm. He also has to-be-determined comedy dates in September coming up. Where are those going to
be? That's right, Flappers and the Ice House Second Stage in Pasadena.
Yeah, he
Flappers
does.
Burbank.
He does it all. And also Fairly Odd Parents. And
that's right.
You've been on Fairly Odd Parents for how
that's
long?
Right, Mother! Fairly Odd Parents! I just did an episode. It was a big Crocker episode. We're doing new episodes, and they're all coming out.
You just came from that, like, literally an hour ago.
I just came from that. It was a big, and my throat is like, ding, ding, ding. My throat does not live. Ding, ding, ding.
Ding, ding, ding. Can you give us a little bit of the Rocco for Rocco's
I can. I'm doing it with Invisalign, so there might be a little lisp that was never there. So if you're really Rocco aficionados and say, wait a minute, there's a lisp, it's because now I've got Invisalign here, and I've got plastic and
I got the
watch it, you smarty.
I have the Invisalign too. I take it out more than I should.
22 hours a day, optimum wear.
Yeah, I'm more like 12. But anyways, and then the Taco Bell dog. Let's do that just for the heck
Vio
of it.
Gorditas, they live.
I have a question. How did the Taco Bell dog come about?
Come about? Yeah, you know, it was one of those where voiceover actors. I guess we're all actors, do things, write things, and. Four words on a piece of paper on a Friday going from the Valley to West Side, Terry Berlin. I'm like, oh, what a waste of time. Yo quiero Taco Bell. Whatever, I'll show up. So I show up, and I do my
Yo quiero Taco Bell, si chihuahua.
She's like, you know what? Do me a favor. Everybody's been doing that. Just use your own voice and see what happens. All right. Yo quiero Taco Bell. Maybe do it a little bit basier. Yo quiero Taco Bell. All right, see you later. What a waste of time. Stupid audition. Then a demo comes in. They say, we want your voice for the demo. And during the demo, they show me the clip. And they say, pretend like this is your neighborhood. And you're like the king. I'm like, yo quiero Taco Bell. And they went, okay, demo makes, dude, we're making the demo. And I went, all right, good, I got paid for the demo. And then snowball, train takes off, and off we go. That's how it came about. And that's how it came about.
That's amazing. And Dave, you've worked on Jim Henson projects, and can you tell us about any of them, or are they all super secret?
yeah, exactly. Yeah, I've done it. I can talk to you about... I can talk at your face.
I promise we will get into They Live. It's just we have two very special guests, so I wanted to give them a little bit of time, audience.
There's a show called on PBS called Thomas Edison's Secret Lab. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Awesome.
It's not a Jim Henson project.
Yeah.
It's a different thing. No. And then there's Battle Damage, which is the thing that I did for Wired, where we just smash pieces of technology and for science.
Yeah.
For science.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And we have a slow motion camera, and it's fun.
The only way you can tell how something works is if you destroy it
in slow
motion.
If you destroy it. So, we destroyed a... Xbox and we destroyed PS4 at the same time.
What did you learn from that?
We learned that I think it was the Xbox. No, it was the PS4 that won.
How does one win?
Well,
being
you
destroyed?
Smash them at the same time, and then one of them actually still works.
Yeah. Sustains less damage.
There was one that one worked and one didn't.
So it's like an expanded version of the egg drop project I had in high school.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I still hold the champion. I'm the champion at Firestone High School for that because I stole my friend's idea and made it better.
This
is what all good engineers. Yeah, thank you. Steve!
It's also the same way they work out in polygamous cults. Yeah. They just drop one of the wives and whichever one is still...
All right. The most durable lady.
All right, I shall have you tonight.
You're the one. So on that note, we are here to talk about They Live, and I wanted to just first, before we get into the plot and everything... there is a plot, there is. Thinly veiled, but... when was the first time either of you saw They Live, and what was your reaction to it? Because mine, as I told you, was I watched it this year, last year in Halloween. Every year at Halloween, I pick out like a stack of 20 movies that I've been meaning to watch for my entire life, and the audience knows that I was a sheltered kid, and I didn't start watching R-rated movies till I was like 15, so I had a lot of catching up to do. Mm-hmm. And when I saw this movie in Halloween this year, it blew my mind because it was the goofiest but smartest 80s weird one-liner action sci-fi movie. It's unlike anything I've ever seen. It's so bizarre.
It's got two personalities going on there. Yeah. I think it was I was watching Stars. You remember when like
Stars was
you could get Stars in your cable package, and then my dad felt cool. He's like, it's sort of like
I used to be the Stars spokesperson.
Oh,
that was my
you?
First commercial gig ever.
Oh,
I did 53 spots for them.
Wow.
Nice. All non-union.
Oh.
So they paid decent.
Lovely.
But at the time, it was more than I'd ever made. But anyway, so Stars,
I remember
Stars.
As a kid, like, turning it on and turning it on exactly to the epic fight scene.
Yes.
In the middle.
One of the greatest fight scenes.
Just being like, this is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But I was a very ADD kid, so then there are really tedious parts to this movie, too.
Yeah.
So I couldn't get through them. Like, I got to the point where there were aliens, and then there's, like, a tedious part, like, where he's talking to the lady, and I'm like, no! Where did the aliens go?
And then that tedious part is interrupted by her backhanding him with a bottle out the window.
If I had continued to watch, but I was like, oh, where's
so
Rocko's
you,
Modern Life?
When
or
did you finally
like
see the in its entirety?
I think later on, sometime. I've sat down and watched it probably in like a big John Carpenter phase where I was like, well, we're doing all of them back to back.
Carpenter Fest.
And Carlos, what about you?
I must have been about 7 months ago after our first daughter. Actually, no, it was before Austin was born, so it was over 16 months ago. Late night trolling. When you're a parent, you just get a few hours to yourself, and it was about 2 a.m. and I saw, Rowdy Roddy Piper. Let's see if he can act. I'm like, he's not bad. This is weird. He found a case, and I came in where he stumbles into the case of sunglasses in the church, and I went, I'm going to keep watching. This is horrible, but I love it. I'm addicted. And then I watched the film in its entirety last night when you dropped it off again. So I had missed the total precursor, him coming to the construction site, meeting Keith David, etc. And it still kind of holds up in a sense that, yeah, it's horrible, but there's sort of this whole Orwellian comparison to what Roger Ailes did with the Fox News network. The only difference between what is happening in the movie in terms of having people obey through the media is that in the movie, the church represents critical thinking. In today's world, Fox News and the religious right, the evangelicals, are aligned into telling you that there's no climate change, big oil is great, our religious freedoms are being overtaken. So that was the only split that I could see. Otherwise, this movie correctly predicted, like Idiocracy, that people would be ruled by the media. I think that although in today's world, the government and the media are disparate. It is the media that is trying to tell you that the government is bad rather than being aligned with each other like it is in this movie, if I said that four times.
No. Wow. Mm. That may be the smartest thing that's ever been said on this show.
Hey, Homer, I'm pretty smart about movies.
But what I was thinking, though, is if this movie could not be made unless it was in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And if it was made now, which they're supposedly remaking it, Matt Reeves, the director of Let Me In, and
remake of Let the Right One In, yeah. Which was not bad remake.
But I feel like if this was made now, it's or when they make it now, the world we live in now, it's more like cell phones and apps. Yes. And we're all controlled by, I mean, I had my younger cousins visit, and they were a blast, but they were very nice girls, but they're on their phones constantly compared to me, and I'm on my phone constantly compared to my parents.
Yeah.
So it's like each generation we get more and more glued to technology, and it's pretty much going to be like either this or WALL-E, where you know.
Well, that's what the alien overlords want us to do.
They want us.
Yeah, that's they I want mean, us to keep podcasting.
Yeah, they want to keep podcasting. Stay asleep. Stay asleep, Schmoes Knows fans. Stay asleep.
And this movie is all a metaphor for Citizens United, you know, where big money and big goes into politics and everybody is controlled by a certain message. And again, it's aligned with the evangelicals now, you know.
Yeah.
God said that humans couldn't possibly destroy the earth. Well, that's good enough for me. Empirical evidence.
I do want to get into the... Let's try this since we're going to... At the 30-second mark, we're going to go for the plot in under 3 minutes. So we're going to take turns in 15 seconds, which gives us to 16:30. We have a little clock there in case you guys didn't know back home. All right, in 10 seconds, we're going to try and do the plot in under 3 minutes. I'm going to have Carlos, you start us off.
Okay.
In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go.
Sometime in the 1980s, a man named Nada wanders into downtown Los Angeles and aligns himself with these poor people, and they find out that there's something going on in Los Angeles, which is
that there's I don't know. There's something weird going
something
on.
Weird.
There's a lot of cops, and there's a happy hobo village, and then he finds that this church has sunglasses in it, and nobody's singing in the church. It's just a reel-to-reel recording. And you go.
Okay, and so then after he finds these sunglasses, then there's this giant raid on the shanty town where everybody, there's like some people that seem actually kind of well off
with
in the shanty town, and then there's the bulldozer, and it's a very eerie scene with all these cops that's coming in and just shoving the poor people out. He finds the sunglasses, and then finally, about 30 minutes in, puts them on, and there's the craziest sequence ever where everything's in black and white, and he's seeing the real message behind all the commercialism and all that stuff where it's saying, like, stay asleep. Obey, blah blah blah, and all this stuff, and he goes crazy, and he starts noticing everybody's like half the people are aliens, mm-hmm. and he insults a few of them, and then just starts shooting them.
Yeah,
boom.
And we notice that all the aliens are white, except for one Asian, I believe. None of them are black or Latino, which is pretty interesting to me. their little message making fun of the white guys, and so he aligns himself with Keith David, who he met on the construction site.
Yes, we forgot that.
Pretty Lego movie thing, like everything is awesome,
and he was randomly shirtless in that scene,
he's
and no one else
shirtless
is.
In that thing, and he's working.
He had to show off those guns.
We find out that halfway through the movie, he abandons his backpack, which was apparently never important to him in the first place. Because once he finds his sunglasses, he says, bye-bye, backpack. I've got all I need in these sunglasses. And so he and Keith David align themselves with this church, and they're going to fight the aliens. But he needs the help of a woman.
Who at first thinks he's going to kidnap her or something, and then back smashes him in the back of the head with a bottle.
Meg Foster.
But then off-screen, she looks at the glasses, apparently.
Apparently.
That's what we think.
Yes.
We all get together, and then...
One minute.
There's a huge shootout. Everybody's all
at the meeting.
Going crazy.
There's a meeting.
At the CPAC meeting.
Yeah, there's a big meeting where they're like, we got to get more numbers. We got to get more people here.
Total
look at
CPAC
us.
Reference.
We haven't grown at all, you know? And so then, there's a huge shootout and everything, and right after the woman shows up, which is when I started to suspect her, spoiler alert. And so then they eventually... They have the most epic 5-minute fight ever between Keith David and Roddy.
Oh, yeah, but that was
very homoerotic
in the alley. Yeah. And then they go to they get a hotel
room. Where are the
glasses? Yeah. And then that is before. Okay, so then anyways, they end up going to the TV station. No, they're running away in the alley.
Oh,
and they turn on the special
thing,
watch that then lets them go into some hole that is the base where their homeless friend from before leads them everywhere. Mm-hmm. And who wants to take us home?
And leads them there, and they go to the top of this tower, and the helicopter's coming up, and Keith and Holly's about to shoot.
Because we find out Holly's bad.
Boom, and then Holly shoots fucking Roddy Piper in the gut, but he manages to. He goes, fuck you, and then he flips him off just to double do it.
Yeah.
And he shoots the TV ray and it explodes.
Boom!
And everybody gets the message.
There we are. We did it.
And
we did it in about 3 minutes.
Oh, and there's a giant.
Two seconds.
The R rating comes at the end where a woman in boobs is on top of the guy.
Yeah. That's the most thing. There's the strangest
gotta
sex
get
scene.
In here.
The strangest sex scene ever at the very end. There's this, like, woman who's barely. She's, like, going like this, Really? Like,
who's the robot here?
She has a sensual look on her face, but her body language is saying, this is boring.
Yeah.
And then she looks down
she's
and there's
like
this...
the monkey in the Flintstones. Well, it's a living.
and then the last line of the movie is the alien looking up and going, what's wrong, babe? Boom, credits. It's so Carpenter. I love it. So, we did it. It's kind of mind-melting. You think that, like, 3 minutes is a lot of time, and then your brain starts to melt.
Yeah. You get stuck on, like, something really specific, and then you add that in.
Yeah.
It's like the fight in the alley.
So, the fight in the alley is one of the best.
I think it's 7 minutes long.
It's like five and a half or something.
More
really
than twice the length of time that we just explained
that
the
That fight
plot
in the alley
the
is like that annoying couple in a cheap hotel that keeps having sex because you're alone. And you're like, when are they going to stop? Just stop. Okay, good. They're starting
they're
again.
They're doing it again. Well, that whole fight, they were saying on IMDb that I guess Roddy Piper and Keith David rehearsed that in like the backyard of the studio. And it was only supposed to be about 30 seconds. And then John Carpenter loved it so much, he just left it in. But I think
that's a lot of this movie.
Yeah, if you're going to get a WWF wrestler in your movie, at the time it was still WWF, you got to let him do that. I think that's where we can get into the plot holes and things like that, where there are giant moments in this movie where it just lags. Where, like, the first... can we play the music
the
in the beginning?
The 30 minutes of the movie, he's just, like, walking around looking at stuff. Yeah.
This is about the first 10 minutes right here, summed up. Mm-hmm.
Picture Josh McCouga walking down
in his 80s fat jeans.
Yeah.
And a lumberjack.
They get awkwardly dirty on his crotch.
Roddy
for the rest
Piper
of the movie.
Is like a very lumpy hero.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
very lumpy and strange.
The Canadian sorry.
Sorry.
I'm sorry about that.
I'm so sorry. And he has, the first thing is that, you know, he's just wandering the streets.
Observing.
To this music.
Observing.
He never shows any emotion except anger. It's either anger or deadpan.
Might I say, the greatest toothpick acting I've ever seen, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
He abandons the backpack and the toothpick once he finds the glasses.
You're right. He does lose the toothpick. Why does he lose the toothpick?
It was got better. He got more confidence.
The toothpick is so huge.
It was so
huge.
Important. He could have used it later, like stabbed somebody in the eye.
And we talked about it. He has a wedding ring on. Apparently, there's no reference to his wife or anything.
No,
the
and then he's super kind of hitting on Holly. He's obsessed with Holly at the end.
Yes, he's got the weird alien eyes, except she's human.
Yeah.
Meg Foster had those killer.
Yeah.
Yeah, her eyes are crazy. Eyes. Yeah. I had a whole theory about the eyes because, like, they're bloodshot and she's got these, like, bright eyes. And it kind of looks like the aliens.
Yeah.
So maybe she's not an alien, but
she's
she
a
wants
muggle.
To be. Yeah, exactly. She wants to be an alien so much.
Yeah.
That she's like.
Did she have those bloodshot eyes in every movie? Was that her thing? Or is
yeah, Meg Foster always had those eyes, man.
Okay.
Always
I mean, I guess they didn't change her eyes, but.
Yeah. They didn't change her eyes.
Maybe just between
that's,
every take,
that's
they just.
Me.
Went, and like blue, like. All right, now you got red eyes. You look
oh,
great.
Oh, now I have to act.
And it permanently ruined her eyes,
John
Carpenter.
The thing about the glasses is that it makes you reveal their robot faces, but also turns the world into black and white.
Yeah. That's probably the first, I mean, because there's all this stuff in the beginning that's setting up this kind of weird underlying current of people being controlled, and there's this hacker guy coming on being like, you know,
Pirate radio.
Yeah, we are under their thumb. They are controlling us. We are sheep, or we are cattle.
That was a thing that was
slaughter.
Actually happening, like, at that time period. There were hackers, like, trying to hack into the signal. There's one Max Headroom guy that's, like, not the actual Max Headroom, but there was a... Do you know what I'm talking about? There was one famous hack. You can find it on YouTube. Mm-hmm. That's great, where this guy in a Max Headroom mask hacked into... the signal for the longest that anybody had ever hacked.
Oh, wow.
Into the signal.
That's awesome.
And then he just, like, talked weird and then mooned the camera for, like, 30 seconds.
Chief did the same thing.
Yeah. I have such an important thing to say.
Yeah, it's a very subversive thing. The rebels against the government, which is aligned with the media, and there's only so many people that are paying attention. And I love the fact that they've got crates and crates and crates of these sunglasses. One big giant plot hole is the first time that... Roddy Piper discovers the sunglasses. He stumbles into the door and it pops open. Yet later on in the movie, it takes a heavy kick to open that same door. Apparently, it was reinforced
and
in the interim.
And also, apparently, that room back there is soundproof, even though you can hear the singing from back there because he was loud as shit.
Yeah.
And nobody, they don't even have somebody, they're mid conversation. They don't even have them go, "You hear something?" No, I'm sure it was nothing. They're just like oblivious to him just pratfalling all around back there.
I like the technology that's on the table there. That's kind of like that's how they make the sunglasses with a bunch of like hot plates.
They never explain it.
No,
they never explain how it works or why, which is fine because it's an 80s movie. But like it's It's so bizarre, the science behind it.
Yes. Like, these are technology things. That's
3D glasses left over from a movie. But the part that I love is that he jumps into the cleanest garbage truck ever.
I put these on preemptively.
And then the two garbage men just tilt the garbage thing and just leave it there.
Just leave it in the alley. They don't even notice.
I feel like they were having an argument and they were trying to prove a point to each other or something.
I'll dump it where I want.
So the first thing, when he finds that giant box of sunglasses, and I guess the first weirdest moment to me is when he puts them on, and like you said, everything's in black and white. Mm-hmm. So I don't know why black and white. It was cool stylistically, but they don't ever explain why black and white shows the alien's true form.
Because, hey, man, you're seeing the world in black and white. You're seeing it for what it is.
You're seeing that they're bad. Yeah, then we're good.
This is good, and yeah.
Because who knows? Maybe these aliens, even though they're keeping us to stay asleep, maybe they're just helping.
You're right. It's the reverse of Pleasantville, right?
Yeah.
He sees the world in black and white, and in Pleasantville, they want the Joanne, what's her name? Joan Allen. Joan Allen. She wants to see the world in color, and he wants to see the world in black and white. As you say, as the world is. So maybe that's the metaphor.
Yeah.
But
it's so, his reaction in that moment is hilarious to me, because he doesn't have any emotion. He's just kind of like walking around. His whole emotional landscape in this is either anger or complete lackadaisical.
I think
just
there was probably more, but we're dealing with Roddy Piper's acting like range.
By the standards of 80s action heroes, he's up there.
Yeah, up there. Better than Dolph Lundgren.
Probably. Tell me if somebody got pissed about that on our comments board.
No.
Not better than Dolph Lundgren.
The real Punisher.
But that's a tough script to act with as well. When you've got lines and you'll play them. I don't want to ruin them. You're going to drop them later. But some of the lines in the movie.
Do we have that sound clip, though, where he first sees the alien and this is how he reacts? Instead of being like, holy shit, his first initial instinct to seeing an alien or whatever, he doesn't even know what it is yet, is to insult the entire room. Here we go. It's the, I'm sorry. It's the Roddy's rant, I believe, is what it's called.
You know, you look like you had fell on the cheese dip back in 1957.
Yeah.
You're okay. This one, real fucking ugly. You see, I take these glasses off. She looks like a regular person, doesn't she?
Person!
Put them back on. Formaldehyde face. That's what
I'm not bothering you. You get out or I call the cops.
Call the cops? You know what you need? You need a Brazilian plastic surgeon.
Those are so many specific insults. You look
that
like
guy seems Iranian to me, and I don't know why he makes a Brazilian joke to him.
Yeah, a Brazilian. Then the thing with the
I think
face
that's
got
the only place you'd be able to get like a full face transplant.
Is
you go to Brazil and they'll give you an entire person's face.
The science they used in Face Off was started in Brazil, right?
Hold on, my God!
Yeah, we're just double checking.
You look like fucking formaldehyde face. And you look like a cheese dip from 1957.
And you're okay. You real fucking ugly.
You real fucking ugly.
It's so ridiculous. And then from there, so his initial.
Keep it on.
Let's keep him on for a little
put
bit.
The glasses on.
Put the glasses.
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 Wait, what
man.
Happens if you wear two at the same?
It just cancels it out, guys.
It just cancels
it
out.
It out.
Now
you're
seeing.
But no, that's the.
Come here to chew bubblegum.
This is the next thing.
And kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum. What a great line.
So that is a good... All of these quotes are a good example of how the pacing of this film. Because it's you could drive a train through the pauses.
Yeah.
And that happens in this movie. But I would like to... Let's do a little riff on that. Chew bubblegum and kick ass.
About this, it really made me disappointed in Duke Nukem.
Yeah, because they stole it.
They stole this line. I was like, wow, Duke Nukem, you really came up with a great line.
It was actually Roddy Piper improvised it because he had planned for a WWF thing. So.
Yeah.
But what he should have said, I'm all out of bubblegum, but I do have a toothpick. Hold on just a second. And then he could have put it back in.
Let's do a little, we're going to play the sound clip and we're going to come up with different.
Like minty fresh.
We're going to play the sound clip and we're going to come up with different scenarios where you would say this line. So I'll go first. When I went into Rocket Fizz on Magnolia Boulevard, it's a candy shop there. They have my favorite kind of bubble gum there, and when I went there, they were all out. So I was pissed, and I said to the clerk,
"I have come here to chew bubble gum and kick ass."
There's that train.
And I'm all out of bubble gum.
Such a long pause. Anybody else got anything?
I want to say May 15th, 2010 was my wedding day. My wife has just read her vows to me. And I take the microphone and I look at the audience and I look at my wife and I say,
"I have come here to chew bubble gum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubble gum."
And now we have two kids.
that's how you went. I thought that's how you proposed.
No, that's the... No. I didn't. No, okay. I flip-flopped it. I wanted to save that for the actual wedding day.
Dave, you got anything? I know I'm putting you on the spot.
I don't know. I can't improve in perfection right now.
How about when a cop pulls you over and just like, you know how fast you were going?
"I have come here to chew bubble gum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubble gum."
It gets, the pause gets more brutal every time.
Like, Roddy, do you have a mint or something? My breath... I've been drinking a lot of coffee today. I'm going to be on the podcast. I don't want to embarrass Ben. Roddy, do you have a mint for me?
"I have come here to chew bubble gum and kick ass."
Oh, could I borrow some bubble gum?
"And I'm all out of bubble gum."
Well, you're not fucking helping.
I remember
why didn't you say that faster? Why didn't you tell me that faster, Roddy?
I remember when in 1968 when I was at the Washington Monument and I heard Martin Luther King say,
"I have come here to chew bubble gum and kick ass."
Historic.
"And I'm all out of bubble gum."
I was really sad they cut that from Selma.
Yeah,
that
they
was
did such cut that out from Selma.
Such a oh, shit.
I'll never forget that.
Oh, my God.
"Do not judge a man by the color of his skin, but by the flavor of his bubble gum." Extra part.
I think Hillary Clinton's actually her campaign slogan when she goes up against Jeb Bush, I think, is going to be,
"I have come here to chew bubble gum and kick ass."
2016.
"And I'm all out of bubble gum."
She's getting heavy endorsement from Bubble Yum and maybe even Bubblicious and
Kim Kardashian's
bubble
ass.
Tape.
Kim Kardashian's ass. I think we've done that one to death. Only because that pause kills me every time.
Yeah, it's
awesome. But that's what happens in this movie. There's moments where it's like super awesome, and then there's like a 5-minute just stretch of just weird. So then, do we have any other sound clips? Let me think.
I feel like we're playing like World Series poker right now. We all have these sunglasses on.
Yeah, it's really.
Sometimes when I watch TV.
Oh yeah, this is great.
I stop being myself, and I'm a star of a series, or I have my own talk show, or I'm on the news, getting out of a limo, going someplace important. All I ever have to do is be famous.
Wow. That was actually Kim Kardashian.
Cult of celebrity.
Yeah. So just so you have context for that, viewers, that was in the beginning of the movie when they have, when they're watching an interview on TV and this woman's just saying, like, how much she wants to be famous.
Well, he's watching someone watching an interview.
Yeah.
Oh, levels.
Because that was back in the day when people, like, stood outside of store windows and watched TV.
And there were tube
televisions. Store windows and tube television.
Yeah. One of the lines that cut me the most is when their leader, the rebel leader in the church, says to them, the world needs a wake-up call, and we're going to phone it in. Knowing what that expression means
totally.
Now. We're just going to phone it in.
Yeah, phone it in.
Forget it.
We'll give them sort of a half-ass wake-up call.
Yes, if you just want to wake up.
It's a completely different context now, and we're going to phone it in. It's like, no, that line doesn't work. And then my other favorite line is like, I think David says to Roddy Piper, "Where do they come from?" And he goes, "Well, they ain't from Cleveland." It's like, why are they going to diss on Cleveland?
What is does Cleveland? I don't know what that has to do with anything.
It kind of looked like they come from Cleveland, but he had to make sure that they knew.
The craziest thing to me is that every time these aliens get word or notice Roddy Piper, they lose him very easily.
Oh, yes.
The first time, they're like, hey, and when he's shooting up
they're everywhere.
Right after the bubblegum line, he shoots up this bank.
Mm-hmm.
Then this guy's like, he does the exact description, and then it's all over the news. He beats up a couple cops in the parking lot.
And it's an old photo of him.
Yeah, it's an old photo. Where did they get
short hair? They're alien overlords. Yeah. They have
so they're good enough to get a short haired photo
of
him.
They have Facebook. In the 80s.
In the 80s.
Yeah.
They're good enough to get a short-haired photo of him, but then have no surveillance that can find him.
Even though they have tiny robots and
droids. Little Amazon droids.
They had a tiny robot that finds him, then he shoots it, and then he goes into a building in that same alley and hides. And they're like, oh, well, we lost him.
This is always the way they get out of anything in this movie is through the back door.
Through the back door. And what happens to that kid he saves and shoves through the window? We never, like, hear from him again.
Yeah.
It's like, you're a character in an alley that I have to say. There, I've saved
because
you.
He was the kid,
see you later.
He was the kid that he got binoculars from, and he never talks in the entire movie.
Yeah. Kind of like Boo Radley.
His dad has... His dad and his daughter and his sister show up later and get shot, but that kid isn't around anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe it was just like a grip son or something.
Yeah,
and they're like, hey, throw my kid in the movie and, you know, save him.
Well, what do you think happened to that character? I mean, did he finally go like, no, fuck L.A.
Yeah, I'm out.
Maybe
he's in the giant ballroom at the end or something.
Maybe he agreed with them like the tuxedo hobo. From the end.
Yeah. Who shows up. That's one of my favorite. We'll get to that for sure.
Oh, yeah.
I don't understand Roddy Piper's plan, his character's plan at all. When he finds out these aliens, he's like, oh, man, this is crazy shit. I'm going to insult all of them. Then I'm going to shoot all of them without asking questions, trying to figure anything out. And shooting like a machine gun. How does he have that good of aim when there's like half good, half aliens?
Yeah.
He's just like, ka-ka-ka-ka-ka. If you're a human, you better duck.
This weird, like... machine gun with a handle on the side.
Yeah.
Like,
so bizarre.
A machine gun that I've never seen in any other movie, in any other reality.
And it is American. I love that the solution to any invasion like that or to any problem in the world is just guns. If we just have guns, this will solve it.
And I love the 80s technique of aiming, which was made famous in Commando, where it's just like point and just go like this. That gets everybody.
Totally.
Oh, yeah.
If the bad guys would just do that, they would actually shoot the good guys.
The aliens,
but they're trying
suck
to
a
aim.
Dodgeball.
That's what it is.
They're trying
you
to
just
aim.
Salt.
You just spray. You just shoot and spray.
Like a sprinkler. The sprinkler technique.
So now, I don't know. What other sound clips do we have that are fun? I'm trying to think what else. I forgot.
Life's a bitch.
Oh, that's a great
that's a
one.
One.
That's a great one. Life's a bitch. That one?
Life's a bitch.
Do you have that one, Alexis?
Life's a bitch. She's back in heat.
Another pause.
Every one of his one-liners has the biggest pause.
Maybe it's a bad
editor or sound guy. He's like, life's a bitch. He's like, I got nothing. He goes, I got it. And then he has to do it again. We were trying to think of substitute quotes that he could have said in the bank, like, hey, man, you're the fan, and I'm the shit that's going to hit you. You know? Just make sure. I think that could have made it into the movie if I was writing back then.
I think so. I don't know if there was. I don't know. I feel like Roddy Piper just said all this stuff. I can't imagine that.
Yeah. I think he was just talking crazy, and John Carpenter was like, yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
The context, though, of this life's a bitch and she's back in heat is after Keith David and Roddy Piper beat the shit out of each other for 5 minutes in this epic fight, and then Keith David finally, instead of like pinning him in a wrestling move, he pins him and then puts the glasses on and he sees everything. And then his thing is, life's a bitch, and it's back in, and she's back in heat. And I don't get what that means.
I don't know. It's just because things aren't fair and men are riled up again and life is just mad at the world.
But it's not an environmental thing.
When was
life in heat before for these guys?
Yeah.
Oh, when the dinosaurs died.
Yes, you know what? Exactly.
Actually, I read there's these men's rights activists online who are ripping into Mad Max because it's a pro-feminist movie and it's against manliness and what like...
Tom Hardy's pretty manly.
So I think
Mad Max.
I think
these guys need to calm down.
I think one of the men's rights activists actually said this. Life's a bitch.
Life's a bitch. She's back in heat.
Yeah, that was actually
the
headline of the article.
My favorite is Roddy Piper's speech about his father beating him as a kid by a campfire or something like that. That has no place in the movie.
Oh, no, that's when they're in the hotel room. After they've beat the shit out of each other and they have the lumpy faces when they come in, that night they're magically healed.
Yeah.
They use some kind of night, like, you know, maybe some alien face cream they found somewhere. I don't know what it was, but they are completely healed. He's healed from falling out the window, which we haven't even talked about yet.
Oh, my God.
He almost killed me.
It's insane.
Watch
so,
fucking talk perfectly.
So the when he meets this Holly girl and he basically kidnaps her, he's in her apartment and he's sort of falling asleep, sort of dazed. Mm-hmm. And then she just, in this awesome shot looking down at them, spins around and clocks him in the back of the head with a glass. And then he falls through a glass window and down a hill in the craziest...
Just like, he falls all the way, all of the Hollywood Hills.
Yeah.
He hits every house along the
way. Knocks out the L in Hollywood.
It's almost as absurd as the fallen hot rod. It's that absurd.
Yeah.
And then he just gets up and it's like, oh. He has one cut. Mm-hmm. It looks like he nicked himself shaving. He's like,
and he scrambles under someone's house and just chills there for a while.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He's a wrestler. He's quick recovery time.
All of those houses have fallen now.
Yeah.
Like that house that's on those stilts, that's gone.
House on the stilts gone.
So back to the hotel room that you were talking about. So then he gets that. He falls out the window. He gets the shit beaten out of him by Keith David. Now they're perfectly okay that they're in the hotel room.
And that's an interesting fancy because I think what Keith David was saying is like, ain't no way this stocky white guy is going to beat a big black man in a fight. So the only way that he can win is at the end by raising a hand and giving me a cheap shot and hitting me in the balls. That's the only way that white man's going to win this fight.
But then Keith David returns the favor and does like three nut knees. He just nut knees.
That's right.
Hashtag nut knees, ladies and gentlemen.
Nut knees.
Knees to the nuts.
Also,
nut
these
knees.
Guys are like friends.
Yeah.
They're friends.
Weirdly. They're friends, and then Roddy Piper goes on a killing spree, and then when he shows up, Keith David's just like, hey, get away from me, all right? I don't want to have anything to do with you.
I got a wife and kids.
Instead of, holy shit, you just killed a lot of people.
Yeah.
We don't really even know each other's names. Maybe I should run from you, but he's like, and then he comes, and then when he comes in the alley, he throws him some money and is like,
which is the best throw. That's the best thing in the entire movie. They're standing so far away, and he just
got the money box of sunglasses.
Right into the box of sunglasses.
You're right.
So good.
So impressive.
Very
but
accurate.
Why does
One
this
take.
Guy yeah. who, unless, the only thing I could think is that he has some subconscious feelings or hints that bad stuff's going on, so that's why he trusts him a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But then if he trusts him enough to find him in an alley and throw him a wad of money, why doesn't he just put on the fucking sunglasses?
Yeah.
Why did
right.
You've already come this far.
Just put on the sunglasses.
He
just doesn't like sunglasses. Maybe he's like, these are not my style.
Come on, man. They're too boxy. Yeah.
They're
just
too
look
boxy.
Weird.
They've got like the double bar from the late 80s, early
they're like,
90s
it's
thing
like,
going
It's like
on.
Two red bands, two Ray-Bans stacked on top of each other.
It's kind of like this it's and like this, this like put together.
Yeah. This is what it looks like, but not green.
Yeah.
And then you see aliens.
Right. That was these are the closest I could find.
I'm trying to think of I want to get to the end here with the end of the movie and then we'll run some more sound clips and stuff. So then after this massive fight, we talked about how they go to the hotel room and the father beating thing, which so
I
weird.
I think he was trying to get a second acting role out of that monologue. He's like, "John, I need you to write me a monologue, man."
Cuz it has no
deeper.
Place.
Like, I did your bubblegum line. I did your life's a bitch line. I need you to write me a monologue.
Give me something about an abusive dad, and that's why I am where I am with a wedding ring chasing after Holly.
You need to do that in an audition sometime.
Just do that
just
monologue.
Just do that monologue,
I'll do it.
Because it's also, like, weirdly generic, if I remember. It's like...
Nada from...
You know what, though, that he picked on? Because they do mention... They mention in the movie, it's like, this is like a George Romero, John Carpenter film, right?
Yeah.
They mentioned it. And I do think that he borrows from the original Dwayne Johnson, who is the leader of the movie in A Night of the Living Dead. It's kind of one of the first times we see a black hero in the film.
Even though
Roddy Piper is the hero, you got that whole Owen Wilson, Eddie Murphy, Bill Cosby, Culp in I Spy kind of relationship happening too, where you do allow another black man to sort of be the hero.
Yeah.
And that hadn't happened really since 1968, Night of the Living Dead. I don't recall seeing that per se.
Yeah. No, I agree 100% with that. And I think that at the end there, when I read that when they have that little jab, that's supposed to be Siskel is an alien being interviewed saying, this John Carpenter and George A. Romero, they're too violent, because at the time, Siskel and Ebert were ripping into Carpenter and Romero about how violent and how gratuitous it was. Which, this movie's violent, but it's not like crazy violent by our standards now.
It's
tame. Even by a Paul Verhoeven standards. Like, RoboCop is insanely violent.
What's weird, though, is that he'll kill people and shoot them in the chest, and in the bank, there's blood spatter behind one of the aliens. And so, some aliens, I guess, bleed, and others don't.
Yeah.
Why wasn't there blood spatter in every kill? It's like, listen, this is what our budget is.
We
got room for one blood spatter. I want to be the blood spatter
guy. I heard it was the same stuntman that played all all the aliens I read on IMDb. I don't know how that's awesome. Possible.
That is the most... He's a chameleon.
He is.
He can turn into an old lady.
I guess.
He can
be I feel like that's a fake trivia thing.
I don't think that's...
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But the craziest plot hole for me is that there's that giant shootout in the alley, and then they can't figure out the watch, and it just drops, and it opens up this hole that then they can jump in that takes them conveniently to the back tunnels of this news station base ballroom. It's like it's an everything you could possibly want in an alien overlord base.
Porthole and a watch.
Except no cameras. No security in
no
there.
No security.
You would think if this is your hub in Los Angeles to take over the world.
And you run a TV station.
And you run a TV station, you could spare a few security cameras.
Mm-hmm. Maybe a little swipe card every now and again.
And the guards are in military fatigues for some reason because they work indoors.
Yeah, but snow camouflage. They're black. like they're in the Alps.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
That's their utility tunnel camouflage.
Yeah, that's what it is. And then they go into the ballroom where all the humans are commingling with the aliens that have sold out. Mm-hmm. And that's so funny to me that they have these guns and they're like, oh, better hide these so we don't look conspicuous. And then they just put them in their crotch.
Yeah.
Everybody else is in suits and ties and they're in jeans. And
well, I think there's an out there because I think that the one guy that has joined them, he's now in a tux that used to be a rebel.
Yeah.
I think that you might have an out by saying the people do notice them, but they figure, they've come to join us now.
Which is weird because you would think...
But they all have that look on their faces.
Oh, they've been shooting this guy that has been on the news and we all know about has been shooting us for 2 days.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
Now they're back and they're cool.
In the back of the room.
And we've got an old picture of
these aliens really poorly planned their invasion. Let's see. We had a question real quick from the live chat.
Apparently, it's a trivia question from Star Drew.
Goodness. Okay, trivia.
He says, bring my laptop a little closer here.
That's Alexis in the booth, ladies and gentlemen. Give it up for Alexis.
We've been talking
booth.
For a while now, actually.
In the booth.
Where did Roddy and the black guy find the cool glasses in the movie?
Where did they find them? That's where...
In the church.
Roddy finds them when he falls into a wall and it breaks open a board. And then there happens to... A panel. And there happens to be three boxes. Which then they also...
Because the Resistance had driven off with a whole bunch of
them. And they load them in a van.
And they never touch on where they go or who...
Who stole them from the garbage can after Roddy Piper hit them in the garbage can and they weren't there?
Which is the safest place. Hide this in the garbage.
I just found this box of super crazy alien revealing sunglasses. I'm going to hide them in a garbage can because I know that this alley only has garbage pickup on Tuesdays and it's Thursday now. So I'll probably figure out this worldwide conspiracy
it's
before
really more
then.
Recycling because it's the cleanest garbage ever.
It is. It's just some packing foam and a few cardboard boxes.
Yeah.
But so
tinsel
now they're
from Christmas trees.
So now they're in the news station and the hobo guy who the lick his nuts line. Play that one. That one's hilarious.
Can somebody please explain to me what the hell that's all about?
Just that idiot licking his nuts again.
So this is the guy who in the beginning. Everything that is said on TV or whatever, he says something like that, just this guy licking his nuts again. And so you think, this guy's totally not down for the cause at all. And then you realize why he's not down for the cause.
Well,
a sellout.
Is he a sellout at that point?
Maybe.
And still living in the hobo village?
Maybe he's getting intel.
The nicest hobo village ever?
Yeah. It is. It's pretty nice.
Everybody's bulldozer coming. We fixed chairs and stuff.
Right. Got some tools on you. Gonna need you. That shower is collapsing. The shower that nobody ever uses.
Yeah. If you can use
hobo
it,
hobo villages
you can
do
fix
not
it.
Have showers.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
This is, it was an upscale hobo
village.
They got
village. A
shower.
But that now they're in the news studio, and he takes them around everywhere. And it's just so convenient that this ex-hobo, now suit guy, now tuxedo guy, lick nuts guy is what we'll call it. Hashtag lick nuts guy. That sounds weird. Don't hashtag that.
Hashtag Ben Begley licks nuts.
No.
Is that
not hashtag?
Hashtag
legumes.
So they lick Ben's nuts?
Sure.
Okay.
So he takes him around the news studio, or he takes him everywhere and tells him every single plan, the scientific explanation of how they travel from here to their planet.
I don't know how it works.
Can we play the scientific explanation? Because it's great.
Gobbledygook.
How it works exactly, but it has to do with some sort of gravitational lens deal, bending the light or some damn thing. You can move from place to place.
It's from Willy Wonka.
I know
how it works. You shoot you with the rain, you're broken down to tens of millions of particles, and then the particles are transferred from here to the television screen. Yes, that's right. No, don't stop.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I didn't catch totally exactly what happened. He is explaining.
He's Mike TV.
Like a TV.
Yeah.
How a TV works.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Boom.
Boom.
Some gravitational lands
so,
kind of thing.
To wrap up the plot, and then we'll play a few sound clips and this ridiculousness that's been awesome. They basically go up. And they just, again, the answer is just, oh, hey, we found out the news station. And they just start blasting everybody again.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go upstairs and they're running and they're blasting the soldiers. They're blasting
the They have
the
to get up the stairwell.
The stairwell.
Several times they say, like, he's in the stairwell. We have to get up the stairwell. Mm-hmm. It's just all
and
about
then,
stairs.
The big reveal, he's like, he's looking for Holly. He's obsessed with Holly, even though he's only been... He has no reason to be because she beat the shit out of him.
Right.
Yeah, and he's married.
And he's married.
And he's married.
Apparently.
He and doesn't remember what her job
but
is.
But he is obsessed with Holly. Yeah, she does something at the TV station.
TV programmer.
And that moment.
Assistant programmer.
Right. When I first saw it, when she's rolling up and then Keith David stops and she puts a gun to his head and blasts him in the head, I was like, fuck you, Holly. I saw that coming, but I didn't want to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then they go up on the roof and she's like, just go with it. Just be a part of the movement or whatever. And then he shoots her, and they both die in the most hilarious way, where they kind of, they're standing there, and they kind of stiffen their body and just fall back onto a crash pad or
something. Right, yeah. They do.
They both die the same way. I was like, and then his death is amazing, because he turns around and again pauses forever while this helicopter has a machine gun trained on him, but apparently they're just taking their time too, because he has enough time to turn, pause for a really long time and say fuck it, which we have that clip. I love it. He whispers it. It's so
fuck it.
And then he flips him off.
And then he then he gets shot with a machine gun and goes and then he's on the ground dying, and he gives him this kind of like weak sort of like forefinger, middle finger.
Yeah.
And then we have the montage of everybody realizing that the aliens are among us with the weirdest end sex scene ever.
Yeah.
The boobs.
Gotta get boobs in there in the 80s.
What other sound clips do we... Let's play some that we haven't played just for fun, and then we'll get out of here. What do we got?
The whole deal is like some kind of crazy game.
Oh, yeah. This is really political. I like this.
They put you at the starting line. The name of the game is Make It Through Life. Only everyone's out for themselves and looking to do you in at the same time. Okay, man, here we are. Here we are. Now, you do what you can. But remember, I'm going to do my best to blow your ass away.
That sounds like capitalism in a nutshell.
I like how he says, I'm going to do my best to blow your ass away.
Because
you're like, oh, yeah, you're going to do your best. I'm going to do my best. But he adds that little caveat.
To blow your ass away.
What else we got there, Alexis? That was a good one.
I love Keith.
That's like pouring perfume on a pig.
Another time he just randomly insults an alien. Yeah. He just goes around either insulting or shooting aliens.
They already have a lipstick on a pig line, so he had to change it from lipstick to perfume.
And she's fixing her hair. So the context of that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
That's like pouring perfume on a pig. Do we have anything else, or have we blown through all of them?
Ain't love grand.
Yeah, I love that one.
So weird.
Which was in reference to nothing.
Nothing. They go in the... Is that when they're in the hotel room, or when is that?
I don't remember that, but I remember that line doesn't make sense.
It's like a bunch of weird shit has happened, and then Roddy Piper just looks at Keith David and says...
Ain't love grand.
Yeah, and then there's...
That sums up this movie.
The haunting score from John Carpenter, which you said he wrote in a day, and you're like, it shouldn't have taken you less time to write that.
It's the same thing. I love his scores.
Bung.
But they're always one,
like, fake saxophone.
Was there anything else that looked fun on there?
I think Mama don't like tattletales.
Mm-hmm.
That's another one. Right before he shoots a bunch of aliens, he says, Mama don't like tattletales. And actually, when I was growing up as a kid, I ran and told on my sister, and my mom came out, and she said...
Mama don't like tattletales.
It's true. It's actually a true story. It's a true story, guys. True story. You got any Mama Don't Like Tattletales? So should we end on a let's play the chewing gum one again for the hell of it.
I have come here to chew bubble gum and kick ass.
Train driving crew.
And
still
I'm
going.
All out of bubble gum.
I love it. Do we have any other questions from live chat? No, they're just hitting on you again. All right. Must be nice. Alexis just gets hit on in the booth this entire time. Mm-hmm. Well, this has been fun. We've been talking about They Live today with my guest Carlos Alex Rocky and Dave Kane. Where can we find you guys? I'm at Ben Begley Comedy. Where are you guys at on Twitter? Where can they find you?
At Davey Kane 1. Whoa. Hey.
Can you say that again? It might have been interrupted
Davey Kane, one.
There we go. And Carlos?
At ChewBubblegum or KickAss.com. No, at Carlos Ellis Rocky Twitter and CarlosEllisRocky.com website.
All right. Gosh. And we'll be back next week with something we haven't planned yet. I think Josh and I were talking about Tremors, maybe. We're not sure
yet. But that's
yet.
A good film.
That might be. That is a great film.
Kevin
but
Bacon
it's also,
and,
it's also really, really awesomely 80s, too.
Not everybody likes sandworm movies.
Yeah, I know. It's an acquired taste. It's an acquired taste. But we'll be back next week with more Guilty Pleasures. Until then, I'll still be Ben Begley. And what is your Guilty Movie Pleasure?
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit PopcornTalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network. The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only, not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.